Applied for Shoppers yet?
Do we have a what?
Land for Shoppers.
Okay. Let us begin. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehyeh bedvaro.
Big yard site today.
Who's yard site?
The Lubavitcher
of
his father, Lady
Yisrael,
may he be
in
Baruch.
The Lubavitcher of his father. Zechus Rabin Leinu, Shem Shavin Aliyah.
Also the Skverev.
Indeed, Skverev, okay.
The one from Kiev.
Every day is a big day. Okay, so we're going to look at these Pesukim Pasuk Gil, Yudal, Rachman, the Pesukim again. We did already come out all the Mitzvahs. Okay, we really did everything in Mitzvahs. Let's right away jump to Rashi. We didn't even do the Rashi yet. Okay, yeah, put it, close the door. Yeah. Maybe also close the door over here. This door over here, because they bang a lot over here. Okay, we have the Pasuk, we have the Rashi. Rashi Pasuk Gil, V'amartim Hei Matla'ah. V'amartim, and you say, He made La'la'ah, behold, we are exhausted. We're exhausted. That's how we learn until now. Rashi says, Behema kechusho v'onu anim, v'ein yecholes lahasig l'mifchar nidorim. Okay, so Rashi learns a bit different than the Mitzvah started. Again, whereas the Mitzvah started to explain, the word matla means to be exhausted. Why are we exhausted? Because we've presented Hashem with a massively fat, thick animal. And it's very heavy. It takes a lot of effort and toil to transport such beautiful, expensive gifts to Hashem. And Hashem says, you're a bunch of liars. He pachter loisa. The animal is not fat. The animal is feather light. If you would blow on the animal, it would move. Rashi does not say this. Rashi says, the Amartem, he named Mat La'a, Behemo Kechusha, the Anu Anim, the Ein Yecholes Lahasig Lemivchar Nidorim. So the word Mat La'a, behold a Mat La'a, the subject of the word Mat La'a is not the person, rather it's the animal. According to the Mitzudos, what is the subject of the word Mat La'a? Us, human beings. We, the human being, we Klal Yisrael, we are tired. We're tired from our hard work. Rashi says, no, the subject of the word matla is not the person, it's the animal. The animal is exhausted. The animal is impoverished. The animal is weak and tired. Behemo kichusha, the animal is weak, v'onu aniyim, we are poor as well. Okay, he's saying both. He's saying really it's going back and forth. V'in yuchas la'asig v'ruchan nedarim, we are not able to afford. We are unable to afford to purchase to bring the best. The chentigim yon son ha da astoha da aisina milei usana. This that we bring from the milei usana means from the weak, from the impoverished. So he's saying over here that we us because we're tired and we cannot afford more than this weak animal. The pachdem oiso zo achas mishmoina esrei tevo shel tikun seifrim. This one, the 18 times we had this before. Also, we had this exact Rashi. Rashi mentions this magic number. There are 18 times in Tanakh. 18 times in Tanakh with the word we explained. We spent a lot of time on this principle called tikun seifrim. He pachdem oiso osi nichtav ella shekina hakasa v'chasvul oso. Okay, the way Rashi describes this, we're not going to spend time again, we want to spend so much time on this, is that really, the Pasuk really means to say, Osi, Hashem is the speaker, and Hashem is saying, you've worn me out. Hashem is saying, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted from all of your nonsense. Now, that would not be proper, der cheretz, for us to say that Hashem gets exhausted, because there's no such thing by Kadosh Baruch Hu as him becoming tired and weak. It's not der cheretz. It's not their cheres to say such a thing about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore we change the word Osi to the word Oso, that it is exhausted. It, the other, there's something else. We transfer the subject to a different entity in order not to disgrace the name of Hashem. Ela shekina ha-kosov l'v'kosvei oso v'pachtem. The word v'pachtem means v'hid avtem, to worry, l'shoin mapach nefesh. Bapach means it means you're exhausted. We call it really agmas nefesh. You have distress. You're worried. You're concerned. You're bothered. Osi the es shiluchani. It's a pasuk in Iyov. There it says as well, oso es shulchani. Okay, there also as well. There the word has been changed to the word OC.
So I have a translation here from that last phrase. You cause pain, an expression of despair.
Okay, pain and despair, exactly. Excellent. Noichel, pasuk yudal noichel, misnakel b'mirma. A person that's misnakel b'mirma, how do they translate the word? What's a precise translation for the word nisk, the word misnakel? Cunning, devious, deceitful. How does the Judaic...
Crafty? Yudalid?
Yeah, yudalid. Crafty?
Craftily.
Craftily, okay, that's a good word. Craftily.
Guilefully.
Sorry, say again?
Yeah, craftily. That's how he translates.
Okay, good.
Nohel.
Craftily.
Rashi says, plots deceitfully with guile.
Excellent. Misnakel b'mirma. To plot deceitfully with guile, b'divrei sheker, that's the guile, lefonai, leimar, ein li toiva mizu, I have nothing out of this, I have no benefit. There is no benefit from serving Hashem. V'yesh be'edra zachar, ayil hehogun le'oila, he has a good animal in his flock, v'hu noide v'zavech moshchos balmum, instead he offers...
He's lying. He's saying, I don't have anything better than this. This is the best I got.
I can't give anything. I can't give. I do this all the time, right? Moshchas balmum kemo moshchasam bohem. Moshchasam means the defect. The defect is in the animal. This refers to an animal that is defective. Rav Kalman, shalom aleichem. Why are you on the screen? We like you in person. Okay, you're on mute. Rav Kalman, you're on mute. Rav Kalman, we can't hear you. You're on mute. You're on mute. Haskol bosam
panai.
Okay,
I'm
now you're mute. Now you're unmuted. Now we can hear.
We imagine you're on mute.
Ooh, that's good. That's good. That's I haven't heard something so good in a long
everything
time.
Everything is a little bit of light.
Who you imagine I'll
say
mute.
That on Monday.
I like that a lot. Okay, that's very good. Okay, so over here, Rashi. To summarize Rashi, let's read the words. Well, I'll read the psukim again to summarize Rashi. Rashi is very similar. V'amartam hinei matlaw. You say, we're exhausted. So Rashi really is very similar to what the Mitzvah stuff had said. You say that we are exhausted, and therefore the animal is exhausted. Because we are poor, and we're tired, and we're overworked, we don't have money, and we don't have time and effort. That's why we serve you, Hashem, in a way that's not befitting. So what does Hashem respond? Hashem's response is, V'pachtem osi. You wear me out. Your nonsense, your lies, your deceit. Hashem Kav Yochel says, you know, I'm sick and tired of this. Okay, in English you would say, I'm sick and tired of all the garbage. Enough of the garbage. That's how it Hashem, but it's not their cheres to say that Hashem said that. So instead we change it to the word vipachtem also. Omar Hashem tzvokas v'avesim gozal. Hashem says, come on, look what you do. You bring gozul v'sabisech v'sachil v'avesim v'samincha. Ha'eretz o'isam yetcham Omar Hashem. V'aru noichel. Hashem curses the noichel, the deceiver, the one who acts with craftiness. What is his deception? Because he really has plenty of money stashed away. He has a Swiss bank account. He has bitcoins. He has assets all over the world, and he says, no, I can't give a donation to the course. I can't pay full tuition. The yesh v'edra zohar, and yet, what does he do? He has a very good animal in his possession. Instead, he vows, and he offers disgusting animals to Hashem. Ki melech adol ani amar Hashem tzvokas u'shminer bagoyim. Hashem says, my name is very great, and my name is exalted, fearful amongst the goyim. Then Rashi in the Mitzvah is not really explaining the connection between that part of the pasuk and the beginning of the pasuk. Maybe we'll see more. Let's see the Radak. Radak pasuk gimel v'amartem ato yochiach Yisrael. Your Radak on page 873. V'ato now yochiach Yisrael hamavim esar karban mitarbu b'havyachem hasel azara. We're going to give criticism to the Jewish people when they bring an animal in the azara. Hinei matlo'o kolomar Yoimar kol echel chaver b'havir b'hakarbon kama ani yogea v'loyeh mizeh haseh shenasasi al kisseifai. Everyone says to the fellow man, you know how much effort it was for me to bring this animal? I live far away. I live in America. I had a fight with this with the airline to let me take the animal on the plane. I bought a seat for my animal, for my animal. I had a whole seat for it. You know how much effort it was to keep it quiet? I even put a mask on the seh when we flew across the Atlantic. Do you know how much effort and labor I went into in order to bring this animal? That's what I'm exhausted. In other words, they say over here that I worked very, very hard to bring this animal, and it's a very choshev animal, it's very fat. What is it in al hakarka? Derech bizoyon. We have now a new translation. Okay, we have a new translation. Vipachtem oso means that you go and you kick it. You take the animal and you shove the animal on the floor. The word vipachtem means to kick or to lashon of a pach. Pach means, well, I'm not sure I'm saying. It means something to cast down. Okay, let's see this for the moment. Alakarka tapilos alakarka v'derech bizoyon v'chein tergum yonason v'shanek tun yosei. What does that word mean? Kmo vayinaer Hashem shetargumo v'shanek Hashem, to shake. Hashem, he shook up the Egyptians. And the targum, the word vayinaer is v'shanek. And that's exactly the same word the targum is using over here in this passage. Indicated that HaKadosh Baruch Hu over here is saying, the people are saying they take the animal and they throw it down before the Mizbeach. B'derech bizoyoin. They say, look what I brought for you, Hashem. I brought you the best. Here, take it. And you give it a shove with contempt. The Yesh Mefarsh Mosom in Mapach Nefesh. Some explain this to mean Agmas Nefesh, despair. Despair. Shinyonev Da'avoy Nefesh, despair. Pain of the soul. Kiloimar. Tach'ivu v'sad'ivu Nefesh Bal Haseh. Now, according to this interpretation, the Radak does not want to apply this to Hashem. He does not hold this as one of the 18 times in Tanakh where we have Tikkun Sofrim, because the subject of the Pasuk, according to the Radak, is the animal, not Hashem. Now, does that mean that there are only 17 times? I don't know. When Rashi says these words, there are 18 times in Tanakh that is called, the 18 times in Tanakh that is Tikkun Sofrim. Does this mean we have a Mesoira? There's a Mesoira, there's exactly 18 times, and now we have to figure out which are the 18 times, or no, Rashi made up that number on his own. Don't worry about it. Mr. Cole.
Now, sure. Malachi here in this particular case is talking about the criticism and condemnation of his peer group at the beginning of the second
Beis HaMikdash.
Is that what
yes? Yeah. Well, can we discuss many times who is he talking to? They're building the Bayis Sheni. You're asking an excellent question, because Malachi is speaking to the people who are building the Bayis Sheni. It would appear that those who built the Bayis Sheni in his lifetime were good people, were people that were very sincere. If Hashem, if the Churban is over and they're rebuilding, there's only good what to say about these people. There's nothing bad.
These are the few who came back. From Bavel.
So these are good people.
They were loving and they were interested in
sacrificing
the return.
Yes, you asked this question at the beginning of the week or last week, and we acknowledge that the question is an excellent question. So who then is he speaking to? These people are his lifetime. Malachi died 40 years into the Bayis Sheni. So if Malachi lived during the first 40 years of the Bayis Sheni, and it's not likely he was alive during the time. So that would mean if you go back 70 years, he would have to be 110 years old if he was born at the day of the Churban. If Malachi was born the day that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that would make Malachi 110 years old. Right. If Malachi was giving over these words during the end of the Bayis Sheni, which is not likely at all, that means he would probably be about 160 years old or something like that, which is we don't get that impression. Malachi is exclusively giving of a prophecy at the beginning of the Bayis Sheni. So what then does he mean? So do you want to say that even during the beginning of the Bayis Sheni, when they started to rebuild, it was the attitude of the people was not proper? That's a possibility that here Hashem had Rachmanis, and Hashem is allowing the Bayis to be rebuilt, but the people's attitude is still not proper. and he's giving them Musa, or do we say that Malachi is referring to the future generations? That would make him different than the other prophets, because the other prophets were giving prophecy to the people of their generation, and we have what to learn from what he said to that generation for our generation. But to say that a Navi is only speaking to the future and he's not speaking to the present, that's a little bit far-fetched. Unless you want to say that the last Navi, Malachi, he was unique, he was different in this respect.
Well, we learned in Ezra that Ezra had to crack down on Hillel Shabbos, right? He had to close the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, because they were doing business
okay.
on Shabbos. So they weren't
all so good. Okay, so Ramayevsky said that it's not so far-fetched to say that during the beginning of the Bayis Sheni, exactly, the people were not behaving. In the beginning of the era of the Bayis Sheni, people were not behaving. They had an attitude towards the Beis HaMikdash.
Wives who were
not Jews.
Things like that.
There was a disrespectful attitude towards the beginning of the Bayis Sheni. Okay, that's what we have to learn.
There were limited numbers of people who intermarried.
No, not limited. It was a massive number of people who were intermarried. The term talking about Bayis Sheni. A massive number of people. A massive number of people intermarried in the time of the beginning of the Bayis Sheni. And I once spoke with this. It's interesting. Who are these people? There's a very famous Chazal that Haman said he terrorized, his prime target were the children. Haman terrorized the children of Klal Yisrael. He told them, you will be first when I begin to carry out the gzer l'hashm l'har gulav l'skola yehudim minav yad zoki taf v'noshim v'yom echad. The children are the first ones to go. The children were terrified from him. It says that the mothers, they imprisoned them. They locked them all up in some concentration camp, the children, and their mothers would come and scream and cry and throw them food. Horrible things. The children were terrified. If you do the math, who were the ones who intermarried? It were these children.
Look at Yehoshua Kohen HaGadol. I mean, his children were married to Shitzis. So you're talking about the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash.
But how could it be that in such a short period of time, Klal Yisrael, they stoop so low to intermarry massive numbers?
Especially, but Dafka, these people who were...
The Gemara said that these were that type of people. Ezra had to be there to verify if they were Jews even.
These were the people who lived, who experienced the miracle of Purim. These, the people that were intermarried, were at the time of the Purim miracle, at the time of the Purim miracle, were children. So what does it go to show? It shows that the trauma of the Purim miracle, there was collateral damage. When we look at Purim, we think, wow, what a beautiful miracle. What a wonderful miracle. We celebrated at such a happy time. That's a very big mistake. Purim was a bittersweet holiday. Although we were saved from death, there was enormous collateral damage. First of all, Doniel Ish Chamudois was murdered. That's what Chazal say. Haman murdered Doniel. Vayavo Hasoch. Hasoch, he was cut down. There's a medrash that says, okay, different ideas. But there's another very important thing to acknowledge is that the children, the generation who experienced the Purim miracle, only a couple of years later, intermarried. They were all intermarried. Because when it came time to rebuild the Bayis Sheni, which was about 25 years later, okay, 18 plus a little bit more, and Ezra comes, what is going on here? How come all of you are intermarried? That means the people that were intermarried were about 6-7 years old at the time of the Purim miracle. So the trauma of almost dying, even though it was a great celebration that they survived, had a major effect on them, and they weren't so committed to Judaism if they were so easily willing to intermarry. So the miracle of Purim.
Is there a source?
For what I'm saying.
Is there a source for making this connection?
No, there is no source. I'm saying, do the math. All I'm saying is.
I mean, these are Mordecai's Talmidim. They were specifically targeted because they were. Mordecai was teaching them. And would you say that they followed Mordecai down there to Eretz Yisrael?
The generation. Look at the generation. How the miracle of Purim, if I'm not mistaken.
I can do the math. Okay. I just don't know that there. That sounds to me like a circumstantial evidence rather than.
Okay, fine.
That
there was a gzeira on the entire Klal Yisrael, lahashmid, laharog, ulabit, eskol hayyuhudim, minar v'yad zokin.
Okay,
it's an idea.
About making the connection between the 22,000 kids that you're talking about, and to say that those are the ones who assimilated.
Not only them,
and
everyone.
Everyone. That's what you were saying.
I was giving you an example. I'm using that as an example that we find that Aham the Medrash, you know the Medrash, you wrote the book. You wrote the Medrash, Rabbi Chol.
No.
You translated the Medrash. But the Medrash makes it very clear is that Haman, his prime target, were the children.
And yes, that's right. The 22,000 little kids who were just
22, but that if,
and wouldn't leave their rebbe.
Okay. Now, if that okay, those were 22,000, but we have to assume that that's just a sampling. If those 22,000 would not leave their rebbe and they were with and they were crying and screaming and the mothers came and the whole medrash, that's I think we have a right to assume that's just a sampling of all of the children of Klal Yisrael and all of the parents. Who were terrified what would happen to them. They were going to be the first ones to be killed. So there was obviously a horrific terror in Klal Yisrael regarding the children. Miracle, the Purim miracle. Haman is hanging in the gallows. It's over. So you would think, wow, what a miracle. Now we're going to commit ourselves. Kilu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim. How could it then be that only a few years later, Ezra's criticizing you all know who is he criticizing? He's criticizing, we have a right to assume the people about in their 30s and their 40s. The people in their 30s and their 40s were at the time of in Purim were between 6 years old to 10 years old, something like that. So they were the prime targets, and here they intermarried, and Ezra's saying, what in the world are you? How come you intermarried? How could they intermarry? They experienced the miracle firsthand. They were the miracle. Goes to show. What does it go to show? It goes to show, you don't really know what goes on in a person's mind. When there's trauma, there's terror, and you survive, there's collateral damage. A person who's in a very dangerous situation, you come out of it, you're a different person, and you don't know. You don't know.
After World War II, that was only a dozen years that they were set upon by the Germans and the rest of Europe. And look how many Jews we lost because of that.
Right, it's the same thing. I know I was talking to someone, he comes to our shir, he's not here now.
Years.
His wife was on the plane, and Tebbi. I'm sorry, hijacking. Rav Hutner, the story with Rav Hutner was hijacked. That was a traumatic experience. Every single person who went through that experience, his life was totally transformed. Totally hear about it. You have all many different people that were on that plane.
Rabbi Fund. Back to Cuba, he still won't go on a plane.
Rabbi Fund? Yeah.
Yeah. He will not fly.
Mayor Fund. Okay. He really. And I know Rabbi Yankel Drillman.
His wife is so aggravated because she's a psychologist and handles people who can't fly. She says she can't make a dent in him.
Wow. Amazing.
I once heard that the Chachamim did not want to tell the story of Purim because Yin was saved by an intermarriage.
Right, that's another issue.
And this might be a radical thing that maybe you're saying right now that young people.
Rabbi Eliezer is saying something very good. He's saying that the whole miracle, again, the question, remember what the question is. The question is, how in the world does it happen that a massive number of Jewish people just like that decide to intermarry? Like nothing. Nothing's holding them back from there. How does that happen? It is for 1,000 years, the Churban Bayis Rishon was already 2,000 years since Matan Torah. No one intermarried. All of a sudden, everyone is intermarrying. My high. There has to be, it's not
on
just...
On that issue, you can't throw that out. Rabbi Akiva married the Matranusa.
She was Megayer.
I don't know. We don't know.
No, it's a Dover Pashut. She was Megayer. No way.
What was the gear then? How was the gear then different than the gear today?
He was married to three women. We talk about gear today. The halacha, we have a Mesorah. The halacha doesn't change. The geirus requires three things. Tzvila, kabbalah samitzvahs, and bris. A woman only has to have tzvila and kabbalah samitzvahs. So in those days, it was probably a lot simpler to be megayer. The world wasn't so crazy like it is today, where you have the whole world in front of you, all of the secular influences. Rabbi Akiva married her at the end. He married her when he was already Rabbi Akiva, when he was already the holy Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was married three times. He had three wives. He was married first to Rachel, and he was married to two other women. So that was the end of his life. So you can't say it was not a sincere geirus. All right, but how does this happen? How does it happen that all of a sudden out of nowhere, so Rabbi Eliezer is saying, because the whole miracle of Purim came about through intermarriage. The whole miracle of Purim came about because Esther was married to Ahasuerus. You can't get a better guy, the best guy in Lakewood. Right? The biggest shake it's in Lakewood.
Gemara is the worst guy.
Right? The Gemara has a big problem.
Right, so the Gemara answers, Karka Oilam, but the bottom line is, Esther married a guy. So you don't think that set. What?
A few other things happened. Rabin Name Aaretz Mityahadin.
Okay.
So there was kind of trauma from this side and trauma on this side. You can see little children. Yeah, my life was. So why? Let me be together with the goyim. It's a trauma. But what we have now, this epidemic. And the little children, this will be affected for many years.
No one knows the effect. Exactly. No one knows the effect. A child's mind is wet cement. No one knows the effect that what's going on inside today is having on children. It seems everything is fine and good. No one knows.
Not everybody processes it the same way.
Exactly.
Some are traumatized.
Some are traumatized and they keep it
to
themselves. What? Adults are traumatized, right? But what's going to be the next generation? No one knows. No one knows the effect of lockdown, people getting scared, people are dying, hearing the sirens the whole night going on, went on last year, and still every day, more fear, it's Delta's coming back, Nachamol, mass. No one knows. No one knows. Like you said, for the adults, it's traumatizing. What about for children? We have to have mispala, everything should be okay. No one knows. But Purim had obviously had a traumatic effect on the children, because look what happened. Go on.
Maybe they're too young to understand the miracle.
Maybe the trauma they understood, that we get.
Yeah,
but the miracle, so he's saying a very good idea. Mr. Murillis is saying is that the children, they certainly felt the trauma. Who says they understood the miracle? The miracle was not a begoloi, was not befarhesia, it was beteva.
Subtle.
So children have a much more difficult time appreciating the miracle that took place within Teva. An adult is much more sophisticated. He can see, wow, there's no way this can happen naturally. The whole miracle of Purim was Lamala Miderech HaTeva. But a child, he's saying a very deep idea. This is like really powerful stuff what you're saying. This is five-star stuff what you're saying. Is that the children, go tell your wife this, the children, they experienced. His wife, she listens to all the Magidim. She knows all the Shirim. she knows everything. I don't think this Chiddush, I don't think she heard. This is a very big Chiddush. Is that Purim, the children experience the trauma. We know that. It's explicit. Rabbi Chol, he wrote the book. He wrote the Medrash, the translation, which explicitly states the trauma the children experience from the Purim miracle. Did the children experience the salvation? The simcha, la yehudim hoy so oida simcha v'sasim v'ikar, did they experience that? To experience that, you have to be more sophisticated. There was no kriyas yamsuf. There was no esh min hashamayim. It was very subtle. There was a political change. There was a new election. Haman was out. Haman and his ten sons. We're hanging the tree. You can't look at that. Too graphic. Don't let the children see that. It's too graphic for the children to see such a thing. Keep their eyes closed. They can't go into.
Do you understand Yom Kippur War? That it was.
They don't.
It was a miracle.
Do they? I don't. Not necessarily saying very good. The trauma they understand.
Right.
Because when the parents come home and the parents are terrified.
They're being bombed.
They're terrified. you get it. The mood, it's not even the bombs. We all knew that when the mood in the home is very tense, the children get it.
Children are very good.
They get it. They pick that up very quickly. Do the children?
They know more about you than
they. They do. Absolutely. There's no question about
it. I see the difference in my nephews. My sister-in-law has 7 sons who were in the army. The ones who experienced extreme battle, you know, who really were in death's door a few times, have been totally changed completely. They're not the same people who went to war that came home. The ones who had a different life in the army are still, you know, with the yarmulkes and tzitzis out, and a couple of brothers are just not the same anymore. They, you know,
absolutely,
they're different.
Even in Gaza, we sit in America right now. Oh yeah, there are missiles, there's Iron Dome. You know, if the missiles were flung over our head and we needed the Iron Dome to protect, we would be very different. Okay, we think, oh yeah, they have the Iron Dome, nothing happened. It's not true. First of all, 10 people died, 330 people were injured, and could you imagine the families that surround these 300 these people, how they were traumatized, and even those who they're not directly affected. If there's a missile flying over your head and you see in the sky, the globe in the sky, that's a very different experience than sitting here in America and listening to some politician, you know, talk about this. It's a whole different world.
They explained after 9/11 how every time there was a noise, how people looked up in the sky immediately. That was the first reaction, to look up to see what happened now.
It's a whole different experience. So you're saying something very, very profound. You're saying is that children, they experience the trauma, but do they really experience the salvation? Adults, yes. To a degree. Adults, when they see a miracle, they see a miracle. They put the pieces together. But children don't process that, they don't have that degree of sophistication yet to appreciate a miracle that's wrapped up within Teva.
They'll pick it up for the parents also. Just like they pick up the...
No, I don't think so.
They'll pick up that.
I don't think
they'll
can.
See the parents
I don't think
the
so. I don't think the same. I remember my parents. You know, I was with my parents.
The same.
My parents, they live through history. They live through the establishment of the State of Israel. They live through Kennedy. They live through... And I was a kid. I didn't know anything about Kennedy. I didn't know Oswald. I didn't know this. I didn't know all these things. And my father would say something, like he would say something very exciting happened, some new information about this war, that war, the new revelation of what happened with Eichmann, this, that. I don't know what he was talking about. I don't know. So he was happy, he was excited. I didn't process it. But when there was a mood in the home of something like someone is not well in the family, someone is dying, you know, that affected me. That affected me. When there was something that was happy, you had to know the whole story. You had to live through all the pieces. I didn't live through these. So now I read about it in some books. I get a little more information, a little bit more insight. But I didn't live through it. So the children, he's saying that children experience the trauma, but they don't necessarily experience the salvation. And therefore, for the children, it's a net loss. It's a net loss. The miracle of Purim was a net loss. It wasn't a net gain for children.
Right.
Therefore, it's not a surprise. Fast forward 30 years later, the whole Klal Yisrael is intermarried, and they have no desire to come back and return to Eretz Yisrael. And Ezra is saying, what's with you guys? How come you're intermarried? How come no one wants to return to Eretz Yisrael? It's not a kasha. Because 30 years ago, when they were children, they were traumatized. And when the miracle happened, they did not process the miracle to appreciate, wow, let's now go back and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. This is something which is a very deep idea. We don't think of it like that. We talk about Purim. Oh, there was a tzara. Nothing happened to us. Nothing. No one died. No. That's sheker. First of all, people, at least Daniel, Vayevo Hasach, Esther was married, Charpa, Esther was married to Achashverosh. And what kind of example, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, what kind of example is that for Klal Yisrael, for all future generations?
By intermarrying, they would relieve the trauma.
Right.
What?
By
intermarried, they would relieve the trauma because they would be mixing
the aggravation.
They wouldn't be.
They felt right. They felt that that would solve the problem. Like the people, Germany. Sorry.
Mordechai joined the government. Mordechai joined over there.
He was Leroy Vecha at the end of the Megillah. Mordechai was in the parliament. Leroy Vecha, he was involved, and not everyone agreed, right? Leroy Vecha, he was part of the government. He wasn't. The example, the models that they had were complicated. Were very complicated. And children not so sophisticated. All they see is Mordechai is sitting in the Senate. All they see is Esther is married to Ahasuerus. And all they remember is that they were slated to die, that they were meant to be killed. They were the first ones to go. So what do you want from them?
And the Jews killed the Oyvim, the Milchama. They won the war. So, everything.
It's a very complicated holiday, Purim. Purim, the Gemara says, Akate Ave Achashverosh Hanan. It's a very complicated holiday, Purim. There's a lot of collateral damage in the holiday of Purim. It's not a simple thing. Okay, let's go back over here to our
The Gemara says that in the times of Ezra, not all the Levim came back, for example, only the ones with the chewed off thumbs, because they knew, they saw.
They understood, They were old.
Back.
They were very, very old.
The new
generation
grew up.
In Babel, spoiled.
In Golis over there. They had a good time. Like they were very happy. Where are you going? When you come to a new country, people assimilate.
It's very complicated. There are many factors.
There's
a convergence, exactly. There's a convergence of many, many factors. Nothing. This is the yisoid in life. Nothing is something that is a major catastrophe. It's never because of one thing. It's always a convergence of many factors. I told you this many times. I used to watch these documentaries on airplane disasters. It's never. They show every single one of them. It's always the same. It's never one thing. The technology.
One thing is taken care of.
The technology today, Baruch Hashem, for every type of problem that can go wrong, there's a solution. If the engines go down, there's a solution. If this happens, anything that will happen on an airplane today, Baruch Hashem, there's a solution. There's a backup plan. How come there are disasters? A convergence of many factors. Hashkocha Pratis. This failed, and this failed, and this failed, and that also failed? What are the chances? It's not 1%, it's 0%. And when it's 0%, it's the Yad Hashem that when there are multiple problems that come together, then Rahman will stand this up. And it's not just an airplane disasters, it's an everything in life is like that. Because everything in life, we're basically prepared to deal with every situation. You don't have situations where just one thing can go. If you go to a doctor, if there's one thing wrong with the person, they can fix it. Today, Baruch Hashem, medicine, you got a problem, you go to a specialist, the hearts will give you a new heart. They'll give you a new brain. They'll give you whatever you want. They'll give you. They can fix everything. Baruch Hashem, Chasdei Hashem. Why do people have problems? It's not just the heart. It's the kidneys. It's the head. It's this. It's a convergence of multiple issues which get you. That's so Golos is the same thing. If there would have been one problem, we would have had a solution to solve that problem. The Churban of Golos is a convergence of so many factors that are working against us. We're overwhelmed. And that's why we have the problems. It's the Yad Hashem. Let's go further in the Radak. The Radak continues, so he says over here, the apostle gives about Pachma, so it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the top.
Page 873.
Page 873, we got over here, sidetracked. If you take the animal and you throw the animal on the ground, and he says the word oso, not like, we got into this thing, the word oso means, let's go to the first wide line in the Radak, the first wide line, the last small line in the Radak, on Radak before it gets wide. The Yesh Befarshim also Mapach Nefesh. It means Agmas Nefesh, despair. And what does it mean? The subject is not Hashem. It is the animal. By taking the animal and shoving it on the ground, you scare the animal. The animal gets scared. Sh'inyonai da'avoy nefesh kil loymar, tach'ivu v'sad'ivu nefesh bal haseh. Ki gizaltem oso k'mo sh'nemar, v'avesem gozlo v'ado. So he's saying over here, you traumatize the animal. Peter. Okay, this is tsar balei chayim. It's tsar balei chayim. And he's saying, see, the Radak is saying something very, very fascinating. If you really want to take this to an extreme, Hashem does not like when you bring a korban, and bringing the korban to Hashem involves tsar balei chayim. Isn't that what he's saying over here? He's saying that v'apachdim oso is you are torturing the animal. You take the animal, this big, fat, gezunta animal, and what do? You bring it to the Beis HaMikdash and you shove it. You give it a kick. Here, you want a carbon, Hashem? You want a carbon? Take your carbon. And you take it and you give it a shove. You give it a kick and you push it. The animal also has feelings. The animal is traumatized. And then you take the carbon, slaughters the animal. Is that called, now this is an idea which I never heard before. Is that a nachas ruach for Hashem? We really don't have any understanding whatsoever of what it means, the purpose of a carbon is all about. It's not possible for us to understand. There's no shekhinah. What are you doing? Bring a carbon, take an animal, and you kill the animal, and that's going to bring you atonement? Because in your mind, you're going to say, I should be the animal. So I'm giving this in exchange for me. I know these are very nice words. We discussed this, but the very nice words, but it doesn't really answer the question. Doesn't hold water. What does it mean?
Well, animals created, so we should eat them. Is that the purpose of the creation?
I don't know. I don't know.
Words, that wasn't God's original intention.
I don't know. So the Rambam. I don't know. The Rambam, Marnevuchim, says it's an outlet. The goyim used to offer a sacrifice to the gods. So really, karbonos is total nonsense. And why do you give karbonos? Because since you're so used to offering animals to gods, to deities, so I can't tell you to stop, because you're not ready to stop. So in the meantime, offer them to Hashem. Okay, the Ramban says, no way. No way. How could you say such a thing? There's sanctity in offering a sacrifice to Hashem. Come on, do we really understand? No way. No way that we can possibly understand what that means. We have emuna pshuta, that there's very great depth, but until there is the Beis HaMikdash, until Hashem's divine presence returns to this world in a tangible way, there is really no way we human beings can understand what this means. We have emuna, no one's denying the fact that we learn the parsha, and we learn kachim, and we learn everything. Right. Kibud avoim. Kibud avoim. You go and you say, a person can say to his father, oh, you old man, here's some steak. Here's some steak. The steak costs $100 a pound. Here. You shove it down his throat. You go to Gehenim. But if you serve your father Rice Krispies, with Nimos, there are Cheretz.
I'll split it with you. We don't have enough Rice Krispies.
What?
We don't have enough Rice Krispies. I'll split it with you. He gets...
I'll give you 10 Rice Krispies and I'll take myself 3. Yei shekoyno elam, that this l'man yarichun yomecha. Same thing. He take the animal, you shove the... Here, take the animal. But he's saying something... Read what it says here. Between the lines, he's saying something very fascinating. It's not a nachas ruach. The carbon does not work if the animal is traumatized in the process. You ever hear such an idea? You ever hear such a concept before? That if you traumatize the animal, when you bring the carbon, you do things to the animal that gets the animal terrified, then you're not yoytze your carbon. The carbon is not called a nachas ruach to Hashem.
That was the big problem unfortunately, we know what happened when they weren't treating the animals with respect. The OU was under fire because they were continuing the hashgacha on this company that was violating.
Abusing the animal or animal rights. Right. It's very simple. If you go, I remember went to Empire many years ago and they have their crates, like Mamish, a death camp for the birds. They're slaughtering birds. So they have They have crates on like a conveyor belt, crates of birds, and each crate is probably, I don't know how many, a whole bunch of birds. And the crates go on like mamish, like forever. They come on these big 18-wheelers, and they put them on this like conveyor belt. I think they slaughter there in a day like 100,000 birds, something like, I don't know, the numbers are astronomical. And the birds are all in the crates, and you really get a sense the birds know what's happening. There's no way, there's a certain quiet, there's a certain sadness. And everyone said, I'm not the only one to say this. Anyone who goes there tell you the same thing. The birds, they have a sense. They have, Hashem gave them a sense of life and death. And they sense what's happening over here. That they're going to be killed. They're going to be slaughtered. And they're not fed for 24 hours because the law, you know, so they're starving to death. Isn't it a horrible thing what goes on? And we sit and we eat chicken, we eat poultry the whole day, every day. And you go to Empire and you see what goes on. It's very sad. It's a very, very sad thing that the birds, it's quiet. There's a feeling of death in the air. And the birds are so hungry, they're starving, because the FDA does not allow the birds to eat with the last 24 hours because they don't want the schmutz in their stomach. Which will bring bacteria, meaning disease. And they're so hungry, they eat the feathers off each other. They eat off each other's backs. Feathers, they find a pebble. If you find a pebble in the crate, this is like gold. Oh, something to eat, they eat a pebble. And you know what happens to those pebbles? It goes into their intestines, it makes holes in their intestines, and the birds become treif. That's why they do. The only reason why they go, and when they do shoot in the bird, they open up the intestines and they roll down. It's like 20 feet, the small intestines, and the boydek, he runs his hand very quickly down the entire 20 feet of the intestines to see if there's a pebble. Because if there's a pebble, there's a 90% chance that there's a hole. There's a hole in the intestines. And bird is treif. If they would be allowed to feed them with the last 24 hours, they wouldn't have to do this. It would never happen because they're not starving to death. But they have no choice, because if you're going to feed them, then we're going to be in a lot of trouble. It's going to increase disease, because once you feed a bird, then the enzymes in its body get to work, and it creates bacteria, which can be a sakana for people. So they don't have a choice. But it's a horrible situation. However you look at it, it's a horrible situation. So the question is over here, he's saying over here, I did that if you did that, obviously we don't have a choice.
For chicken, they look at all the intestines 20
Yeah, in America.
I don't know if they have time for that.
I saw my own eyes. They go very, very quick. Every chicken, very quickly. Super fast. The FDA does nothing. The FDA, I saw their whole process. They have the FDA, they have FDA people.
Yeah,
They sit there, they do nothing. They just sit there and they look. And they also, it's all done, it's automated. It's not so hard because the machine, it's on a conveyor belt, and they hang them up, and the machine, maybe have even AI today, you know, artificial intelligence, they know exactly, it mamish plucks it out. By its of the machine,
and it
rolls down. It just rolls down in a second, and they just mamish like it takes them a second. 1 second, they run their fingers down it in a second, and anything that is suspect, they just pull off, and they just push to another row, and there they have another body who more carefully inspects it with more quickly, and then either it's treif or it puts it back. But it goes like lightning fast, the whole process, and a lot of it is automated. They have the technology gets only better and better. Probably by now they have artificial intelligence, they have AI, which can probably right away identify things that I'm sure it's much better than it was. And what I heard Empire is not even nearly as sophisticated as some of the new plants, some of the Hasidisha plants. A couple of years ago, they built a brand new plant. I don't know where, maybe in Monroe, and they say it's like none other. The technology that they're using over there is beyond belief. Beyond belief. There's a lot of things going on in this world. You see the driverless cars, you see all these things that are going on today. Technology is advancing to a level beyond belief. But this is an incredible idea, what it says here, is that when you bring a carbon, go talk about, you know, tsar balichayim, You have to have respect for the animal. The animal is giving up its life for you in your place. And the animal has to be treated with derech eretz. The animal has to be treated with derech kavod. So for the person over here, so then that's how he learns. The Radak is saying something that is so novel, that is so beyond belief. This is like mamash a field day for Peter. Then we'll see what this Radak says. It says over here, Hashem is criticizing Klal Yisrael, v'amartem, hinei matla. You say, oh, I'm so exhausted, I'm so tired. You know what I did? I schlepped from America this fat, massive animal that it's so heavy. And what do you do now when you bring the animal to the Beis Hamikdash? V'hipachtem oso. You shove it. You take the animal and you give it a zetz. You hit kohen. Take it. You give it a shove and you bring the word v'hipachtem. You bring upon the animal agmas nefesh. You cause the animal, by shoving the animal, you cause the animal agmas nefesh. As if the animal is a human being, has feelings. It does, I guess. It does. Pets.
I have a story. It's an unbelievable story. I heard a rabbi speaking, and he said his 7 or 8 year old daughter said, "How come the chicken we eat Friday night has the same name as the chicken that goes around going bok 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 bok?" She didn't realize that we killed the chicken to get the chicken on the table. She saw them as two different items as opposed to the same chicken.
She thought the chicken on the table grew in the backyard. She thought that it grew in the backyard, right? The chicken, like me, that's what I also think. Where does chicken come from? They produce it in China. It's produced on machines, 3D printers. They have 3D printers that make chicken, right? It's not a real thing. It's not a living creature. It's an incredible. You cause the chicken agmas nefesh. So notice the word oso is not now one of the 18 tikkun soifrim. It's not referring to Hashem. It's not referring the mitzvah. What was the mitzvah's other interpretation? I forgot the mitzvah's other interpretation. Mipachtim oso was, how can I forget? Everything I forget. Go back to the mitzvah's. First, the Mitzudos says that it's a tikkun soifrim, and then he said a second interpretation. It's light. The pachtem oso is going on the bird that it's paper. It is feather light. It's a lie. We have sach hakol in total 3 translations for the word oso, the pachtem oso. Let's review. According to the Mitzudos David, it means it's a feather. It means to blow. If you were to blow on this animal, it would move, because the animal is feather light, and you are liars. You claim that the animal is fat and heavy and weighs a ton. That's a lie. If you were just to blow on the animal, it would move. It's a guzma, obviously. It's an exaggeration, but that's the point that the pasuk is making. So according to that interpretation, the word oso, who is the subject of the word oso? It is the animal. The Mitzudah's second interpretation is, and everyone else on the page, is Hashem. Hashem is speaking, and Hashem is saying, you give me grief. You give me grief. And the pasuk should really say OC, but we changed the word OC to OSO. And the third interpretation is, Vipachtem OSO, is you give the animal grief. How do you give the animal grief? By mistreating it. Animals have rights. Tsar Baalei Chayim. And if you mistreat the animal, Hashem says, I don't want such a carbon. I don't want a carbon like that. I want the animal, they should respect the animal. It's a living creature. It's coming as a carbon. Don't go and give the animal agmas nefesh. If not for this radak, I would never. Who would have the audacity to say it's a pshat? What? So scientists say there's been a lot of studies over the years. This is nothing new. This has been over the years, and this is something that the goyim. It's like, you know, it's like with all these things going on. What's the truth? What's not the truth? With the virus and this, all these things going on. It's been proven over and over that shechita is the most humane way, the most painless way to take the life of an animal. Shechita. The goyim, because it's religious, a religious service, they don't care, and they totally view it as being disgusting and being just torture to the animals. What do they do? Today, what they do is they stun gun, they electrocute the animals.
Right.
So they've done this study only 1,000 times, where they attach the animal to multiple sensors. They have multiple sensors, today with taste technology, the nerves, and they can detect pain, because they know, if you go and you torture an animal, they know there are certain sensors. If you go, you have an animal, and you take a baseball bat, and you beat up the animal, you break its bones, so they see on the sensors that the animal's pain goes off the charts. They see on the sensors there are certain parts of the brain which they know, the nerves, which are the nerves of pain, and they see the numbers go off the charts. So they take those same sensors in their brain, which they know as a fact is what reacts when there's pain, when you take a baseball bat and you beat it up, or if you give it poison, or you do all these things to it. So then they take a stun gun and they electrocute the animal, and guess what? All the sensors go off just the same. But when they do shechita, it doesn't. The sensors are much, much, much less. Almost nothing. So that goes to prove, with today's technology, shechita, it's unbelievable. It's like Chazal knew the Torah, told the Zavachta, and they have a whole Masechta Chulin talking about how to do shechita, and the knife, there should be no nick, and this, and this, and the vrid, and all the whole sugya. Chazal knew exactly what
to
do. So
the most humane way of killing a person is the guillotine.
Well, that's, by the way, well, that's called herrick. That's true. You see, that's true. That's called herrick. Herrick, there are four types of Misas Bezdin. And one of them is decapitation.
Yes.
That's right. And the other is Sreifa. What's Sreifa? I mean, you don't want to go to all the gory stuff over here. Chazal say, V'ohafta l'reyacha kamocha. Beror lo misa yofa. When you have to kill a person because he did an Avera, don't you kill him in the most humane way possible.
Or less mutilation.
Less mutilation, skila. When you skila, when the person dies by falling down, Chazal say it has like Goldilocks, not too high, not too low. If you throw him down that's too low, then he's not going to die; he's going to suffer. If you go too high, he's going to be mutilated. So it has to be from a two-story building, two stories. They made a calculation: the most humane way, a person did a crime. You know, a person's a murderer. He has to die. There's nothing you can talk about. You know, there's the halacha of the zar gili raish shechastam shabbos. That's the way it has to be. But Chazal, but the Torah says v'yohafta l'reacha kamocha biror lo, select for him a misa yofe, a pleasant way.
Eric was
choking. No, chenek. That's chenek. So chenek is where they basically close. They close the esophagus.
That's torture.
I get, we don't.
Can't
yeah,
exactly.
Well, it's not easy to die. It's not. No one's going to tell you.
I'll come back and tell you.
The person committed an avera. Listen, the person. It's not common for a person to die. When does a person die? A person dies when he does an avera, and he has to have hasra. They have to warn him. If you remember now, if you do this avera, you will die. We have two witnesses. It says in the Torah, this pasuk. And this pasuk, it means do not do this. And if you do this you're going to die, and how are you going to die? It's not so common for a person to die. It's extremely rare. The Gemara says that the best that they would kill a person once in 70 years, or something once in 7 years, they were called a killer bezdin. They were a killer bezdin. Once in 70 years. If they kill two people in 70 years, they're a killer bezdin. It's too much. There aren't enough wicked people in this world that it should happen that...
There are too many variables. You have to have a warning, you have to have two witnesses.
Exactly, exactly. So it's not like, Bezin's looking for people to kill. It doesn't go like that. Unless, Chazal said, unless you're living in a society where life is cheap. So then the halach is no, then Bezin steps up. Then they step it up. And they can kill as many as they need to kill in order to put society back into, get them back where they're supposed
maybe
to be.
Put them in charge in New York City.
Maybe they should. But in a healthy society, It's not supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be, they killed two people in 70 years. They're killers. And that's not a good, you don't go down a good, that's not a good reputation to be called a killer Bezdin. Okay, let's go further. This is not for what it says here in this Radah, you would never have the chutzpah to say such a thing. But he says it. Look what he says. One more thing. He says over here, this is incredible what he says. He says, the in the Yesh Mefarshim, you can underline it with a red pencil, the Yesh Mefarshim, also, in Mapach Nefesh, She'in Yonoi, Da'avoy Nefesh, Agmas Nefesh, despair. Who's despair? Who? Kiloimar, Tach'ivu V'sad'ivu Nefesh Baal Haseh. Would you believe such a thing? You go and you cause agmas nefesh to the neshama of the seh. Ki gzaltem. Oh, maybe I made a mistake. Look at that. I'm saying nonsense. I said it's wrong. You see, I said wrong. I made a mistake. I really made a terrible mistake. I didn't read it carefully. He's not saying this. What I said, I don't know if it's wrong. Who said it's wrong? I'm saying, but it's not what the Radak says. You know, they have the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer was prolific. He told this Talmidim, if you need to make a drasha by a family simcha, I give you permission to plagiarize. I give you permission to lift, go to my sefer, Toras Moshe, take a vart, and make believe it's your vart. Gezun te hate. You need a good vart for a simcha? Just steal. You can take from my. Don't say your chidushim in my name. I don't give you permission. Don't say your nonsense in my name. So what I said over here is my nonsense, and I said in the name of the Radak, which is wrong. Dvarim shamarti tohu sein biyadi. I'm not saying that it's an idea, but that's not what the Radak says. The Radak over here says that you bring an animal that's a carbon, because agmas nefesh, not to the animal, to the owner of the animal, because you didn't pay for it. You stole it. Here is the animal. I bring this beautiful animal. Wait a minute, where did you get this animal from? Don't ask questions. Where did you get the animal from? I stole it. That means the owner, the person who worked for this animal, right now has agmas nefesh. The pachtem also. You have caused agmas nefesh to the owner of this animal because you stole the animal. So Hashem says, how could this carbon be acceptable to me? You're bringing this on the Mizbeach to bring an offering to me when the consequence is that there's a person in this world who has Agbas Nefesh, that their animal disappeared. You wake up in the morning and the car is on the driveway because someone stole the car. That's a lot of Agbas Nefesh. Okay, a lot of Agbas Nefesh. So the Balabas wakes up in the morning and where's the animal? The animal is not here. The animal disappeared. $1,000 animal. He has Agbas Nefesh. Where's the animal? It's in the Beis HaMikdash on the Mizbeach. Hashem says, you think I have pleasure from this? That is a carbon when there's a Jew somewhere in the world who woke up in the morning, has agmas nefesh, that his animal was missing, that he spent so much time caring for and feeding and working for. What kind of crazy thing is this? You're not going to get credit for this. The Hadesim Gozel.
The Gemara mentions also, being part of the thing is, if, let's say in a carbon all of Yore, if you yoitze, if you bring beyond what they tell you, you're assessed to bring a mincha because you're very poor. But if you're bringing the carbon asham because you stole, so now you're going to say, I'm going to bring an animal. So what'd you do? You stole it. So to be expiate your sin for thievery, you stole an animal.
Another animal.
For the carbon.
You're the problem. Okay, let's finish over here. V'adoy niyavi. Then he quotes his father, who says, V'adoy niyavi zal perash uvipach demin noy nefeach be'esh pecham. It means to blow here. What is it? In a fireplace, you have the billows. What is the word?
Yeah,
The bellows. It means to blow air. Kiloimar heim oimim. They say can you get in to stoke the flames? Heim oimim. You get in heim. They're tired. Mitarach hakarbon shenasu al kasei from the nikari. Lema shushamin bal bosar. Who behepuch? It's a total lie. He called kachu kachush. It's so weak. Vidal basar shim tin picho. If you would blow on it, yipol oritz would fall on the ground. This is exactly what the Mitzvah Stavit said. The Mitzvah Stavit must have taken this from the Radak. right? It has to be. When the Mitzvah Stavon, he said this interpretation, he took from the Radak's father, who says that you're a bunch of liars. You claim that the animal is fat and heavy, and the truth is the animal is feather light. If you blow it, it'll fall on the floor. The tear game behind the name Atlo Yeha Da Asina Mile Usa Mile Usana. The animal is very weak. The animal is according to the Radak's father, Matlo means I am so tired from carrying a fat animal. The targum is just the opposite. The subject of Matlo is the animal. The animal is weak and feeble. The animal is worn out. Just the opposite. You bring a mile usana, you bring before me a weak animal. And then the next word of the Targum was the pachtem oso, you shove it down in front of me. According to the Targum, the pasuk means that Hashem is complaining. What do you people do? You bring me garbage, you bring me defective merchandise, and then your attitude, you shove it, you take it and you throw it down on the floor. The pachtem oso, and you throw it on the floor. Okay, you have all these combinations of commentaries telling us how to translate the word matla'ah and vipachtem. Who is the subject? Does the word matla mean that you're tired because the animal is fat? Or is the animal tired and weak? Vipachtem does it mean to blow, it's very weak. Vipachtem means to shove on the ground. Or vipachtem means it's agmas nefesh. Who has agmas nefesh? Hashem has agmas nefesh. The victim of theft has agmas nefesh. Everyone over here is taking these words and playing with them, manipulating them, maneuvering them in order to bring out, you make all the various combinations, you come away with 10 combinations of how to translate the word, these pasuk, when you have, we have all the variations of how to translate these words. Okay, it's late now, we're going to have to stop over here. Okay, we'll take a short break, and then I want to continue. I want to talk about some things in this week's parasha, about Al-Hamichya, a lot about Al-Hamichya, and some other related issues to some of the things in this week's parasha. But we'll come back in a few moments.
Just one last thing. You are retracting everything you said about your desire to the
end? No, I'm not retracting it. I'm just saying that it's not what the Radak says. I'm not retracting what I said. There has to be truth to it. I am a card-carrying member of PITA. but it's not what the Radak is saying. Absolutely not. It's a mistake. The owner of the seh from whom it was stolen. I thought it said the nefesh haseh. You're causing the animal agvas nefesh by abusing it when you put it on the mizbeach. So it's not what he says. And that's what I said. Wow, that's a shocking thing to say. Who would say such a thing? And then I realized it's not really what he said. Is it wrong? I don't know if it's wrong. You can't say that. We learned yesterday that you're not allowed to eat until you feed your animals. It's a halacha. This week's parasha. And the Sate said, "Bisavcha live hemtecha, and then v'yachalta v'savata." Even fish. Yes and no. You have the Gemara with Rabbeinu HaKadosh where a para escaped.
Right.
A parah and he said, "Save me, save me." So he told him, "This is what you were created for." And the Gemara, he was punished for that. Even though it's true, this is what you were created for. The fact is, if the animal escapes and comes to you for rachamim, you have to show it the racham of kol masa. There's a balance. So on the one hand, yeah, the animal was created for this purpose. But on the other hand, the animal isn't sorry. You have to minimize its pain. The Gemara says the Farish.
Rebbe on one occasion gave a little...
Right, he was punished. And he was punished because he did not show... It was a mice I saw on the news this week where they were transporting livestock to the slaughter. It was this week, I'm story about it, this week or last week, and they had this clip. And they were transporting it to the slaughter on one of these big, I don't know, whatever they how they transport them, and it escaped. It escaped, and they showed it on the highway. It escaped. So I right away thought, if it escaped, the halacha is, let it go free. Don't kill it. Don't take it to the slaughterhouse. It's not the Gemara. Okay, it escaped.
It
gets a pardon.
There was a bull running around loose. They couldn't understand how a bull was running around.
You know, they have, you know that all the turkeys that the president's pardoned, you know what happened? They all end up dying a very brutal death. I wrote a heart of all the Thanksgiving, the tradition, the president pardons a turkey. So what happens to that turkey?
They put it in the zoo.
What happens?
They
did a study. They mamish, the people have nothing what to do with themselves, and they mamish, they follow them around. The turkey, every year that they were pardoned. The end of the article is, the turkey would have been much, much better off if it would have been slaughtered. And on someone's table, dining room table for Thanksgiving.
They
send it somewhere, and they always ends up having a miserable existence.
Yeah, another animal eats it up, it gets
sick.
The kids pull the feathers.
Yeah, it gets all the grace size. It would have had a much better existence had the president not pardoned the turkey and let it have been slaughtered and eaten on someone's Thanksgiving table. So you don't know how cold totally the mazel afilu sefer Torah shebehech. You know what the Sama Rav says? Who has the mazel? The Sefer Torah they read from, or the Sefer Torah that they do not read from? So you say, Hakol Tolim, I feel the Sefer Shebeho. So it seems the one that they take out to read, has good mazel. If that's what it really means, to just say, I feel the Sefer Torah, Hayyotse Minahecho. Chazaz, I see the Shebeho, in the Hecho. You know who has the good mazel? The Sefer Torah that they don't take out. Because the Sefer Torah they take out to read, the Olam is Mevazeh. Everyone talks during davening. They open up the Sefer Torah, everyone is talking, no one's paying attention. So who are they Mevazeh? The one that's Sefer Torah on the Bima. The Sefer Torah in Yeron HaKodesh, they didn't suffer the Bezioinus. The Satmar Rav says this. So you don't know who has the Mazel.
Let us switch rules.
You don't know who really has the Mazel.